Mr. Cochrane, Real Three, we were talking about your time on the HMS Renown as a boy, when you first joined it, and you said that your action station was on the pom-pom. Now, could you describe what exactly the pom-pom was and what the gun drill was and what your role was?
The pom-pom was 8 barrels. It fired 120 rounds per minute. It was water and air-cooled. It had a range of 1,000 yards. It had a gun layer, a trainer, and a captain of the gun. And it also had interrupter levers. Able seamen or boys that worked at the interrupter levers. Well, what it meant by the interrupter levers, it's possible to, when you're firing the 8 barrels of the pom-pom, if you want to reserve your ammunition, the captain of the gun can say, close one or two or three or four interrupter levers. So what you'd do, you'd push your interrupter lever in, and that would stop that particular gun from firing, you see. So it's quite possible in an air attack to save your ammunition. With it firing 120 rounds per minute, a belt was only 14. There was only 14 rounds on a belt. So you had to put them on and clip the belt on the N1. So it kept them going to keep them, the ammunition loaders, keeping it going. So to save ammunition like that, you could use four guns and keep topping them up and then change four guns over again by pulling the interrupter levers out and let them fire and pull the other ones in to keep reloading. So,
and what was the actual gun drill? What did everybody do on the gun?
Well,
so the loader, what did exactly did the loader do?
He just got the belt at 14, and he had like a rack on the pom-pom, and he'd just load it onto the rack, and then he'd get another 14 in the clip and just put it on the N1. And that's how he kept doing it, 14 at a time, and he just keep loading it that way. And
so what did the rest of the gun team do?
As I say, there was four able seamen doing that to keep the 8 guns going. Then you'd have your layer and your trainer. They'd be laying and training on. The captain would be going and be giving the instructions out and making sure everybody...
So the layer and the trainer, what were they doing?
They were looking through the open cartwheel size.
Open?
It's a cartwheel, like a cartwheel. I've got a book there.
If you could describe it. I know it's difficult. If you can't, then...
It's like a round ring, but you had three of them. And he used to look through them to get on the aircraft. And you could say what angle of sight it was. And you'd be... The layer and trainer would be reading this out, what angle of sight was. And that's how they kept on. On this open site.
So they'd shout out what they could see.
Yeah.
And who would twiddle the knobs to put them on? Or who would actually sight the gun? Would they? Or
yeah, the layer was getting on the aircraft, bringing the guns up. And the trainer was swinging round, you see. Well...
And the captain of the gun?
He was... given the instructions what to do and...
Which aeroplane to shoot at.
Yeah, and he'd tell them when to fire.
Now, at this stage, as a young boy, you'd presumably just be loading, would you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, when your watch had finished, yeah. Just talking about the watch, so what would happen then? You'd go on to this business of cleaning a bin, your deck party, would you?
In working hours, you'd go on to cleaning. But in the evening, you'd once you finish your watch, you'd go off then, and you'd either went down to your mess deck and played crap or...
Played what?
What do you call it? Ockers. All it was a Ludo.
Why was Ludo so popular in the Navy?
We used to call it Ockers, but the reason it was popular, everybody used to gather round. There'd be four of you playing, and you'd build bridges, you see. Like, you'd get one on top of the other of yours. So the chap, he couldn't pass until he got a six. So to knock your two off, he'd have to get two sixes, you see, one after the other. Otherwise, so this is how, you know, it was honest, the fun I've seen on a mess deck. Everybody interested in it, you know. Some people would play cards. You weren't allowed to play for money. The only thing you were allowed to play, and he played it once a week on the Renown, was Tombola. And the Master Charms and the Commander used to run it. They used to... That was the only...
Did you know about Crown and Anchor? I mean, was there a Crown and Anchor?
Oh, there was on the Renown, but...
Not in the boys?
No, but it wasn't allowed, but they found out there was a three-badge AB at it. And the Master Charms got permission to make him open his locker and took the Crown and Anchor board off him. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other recreations? What else might you do?
Yeah, we had the recreation space up top. You used to go going up to the bridge, you'd go through the recreation space, you'd go up the bridge.
What was the recreation space?
All as it was a big, big area. And there was no table tennis or nothing like that there. Just an area with tables and stools. And they had what you call a goffer bar. That was the only drink you could get. It was like partly water and partly lemonade or whatever you call it, you know. They used to call it goffers. But that's the only drink you could get there then. We had a canteen that was open so many hours a day. Now and again they'd sell chocolates. You were allowed one bar of chocolate for twopence. And they used to sell cigarettes. You were allowed a packet of 20, either Woodbines or Capstan, you know. And you could buy your shaving soap there and that in the canteen, and envelopes, you know. And once a month you used to get a special envelope to write home and you seal that. All the others you couldn't.
Well, perhaps when we get away from Skeppel, yeah. We'll come more on to that. Yeah. So that was sort of like a typical day. Now, that's in harbour. Were you in harbour, I mean, when you joined them at Scapa, or would that be the same routine when you were at sea?
No. What had happened at sea, you'd be working your three watches, you see, and the way they work it, the forenoon watch would be closed up 8 till 12. The middle watch, they'd be sleeping, because they'd just come off at 4 in the morning. But the afternoon watch, they'd turn to at 9 o'clock after the breakfast, and you'd have a prayers. You'd maul muster back aft on the quarterdeck. The padre would come there, and they'd say, "Fall out the Roman Catholics." Well, they'd go, we had a priest as well. They'd go to the priest, and he'd have a little sit mass or whatever it was with them. And we'd have a prayer, and then after that we'd turn to and work part of ship cleaning or whatever it was. Then dinner time you'd knock off then and have your...
That was at sea?
That was at sea, yeah.
But what was it like in Skapa? I mean, was it dull? I mean, we were there long. Were you there long? I'm not sure what the Renown did, you see.
Well, what it was at Skapa, all the big ships would be in there. And
it was a home fleet, isn't it?
Yeah. And what you'd do, they'd give you watch ashore at, you'd go about 1 o'clock if you'd watch ashore in a drifter. Now, all as there was in Scapa, there was wonderful football fields. That's all I went ashore for. Play for the department team, now and again I play for the ship. they were good pitches, very straight, level, good grass and everything. well marked out. And then there was a canteen, what you call flotta canteen.
Now, what was the football like playing for the ship or for your department? You know, for my department, you mean for the seamen?
Yeah, I played for the quarter deck division. But on the Renown, we had an interdepartmental competition, and it consisted of the quarter deck had one team, the main top had one team, the foretop had one team, the forecastle had one team. Signals had one team, cooks and stewards one team, torpedomen one team, stokers had an A and B team because they had professionals in their team. In fact, we had Jock Smith, the captain of the ship's team, played for Clyde in City Life. And the Marines had two teams, A and B. So he'd go ashore to play, he had a proper referee. Everything. And the favourites to win the departmental competition was the Stokers, because they had so many professional players. But the Marine A won it. And the captain of the Marine A was the right back, right half, was Corporal McLennan. He was their PTI. He was their PTI, he was.
But it was a good standard of play then, was it?
Yes. We were runners up the quarter deck. We actually beat the Stokers 2-0 in Scapa.
And what about playing for the ship? What was that like?
Oh, that was great. I played for them against the King George V. They were all Scotchmen, King George V. And we beat them 3-2. Yeah.
Did they have any professionals? I mean, there must have been professionals.
Oh, there was professionals in some of the teams, yeah. Yeah, I mean, later on when I was on the Black Prince, we had professionals in there.
So you must have been pretty good.
I was. I kept one out of his place on the Black Prince, yeah. Played for Fulham, and they were in the First Division at that time.
Yeah. And you, what position did you play for the Renown?
I played outside left for the quarter deck, and outside left for the ship's team when I was picked.
So you were quick?
Yeah, quick, yeah. Yeah.
And what about the canteen? You were saying that the flotter canteen.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, what it was, they had beer there, mild and bitter. It wasn't very strong. And you could get sausage and mash for a meal, you know. Well, you all had to leave there by 6 o'clock, even in the summer. You weren't allowed ashore at night in Scapa. And you all had a drifter to take you back with, like, the name of your ship on. That'll be on the front of the bridge, and you'd all get on, you know. And they'd take you back to the ship then.
Now, would you have a pint? Were you drinking, or...?
I didn't drink much in them days. I had, now and again, I'd have a pint of mild, you know.
But that was it?
Yeah. As I say, all as I want to show was for the football, you know.
What was it like in Flotter Canteen? It's quite a famous place, but...
Yeah, it was a great big long canteen, and unknown to the naval people. They had a patrol there to make sure everybody behaved themselves, but they also had a crown and anchor board going by the toilets, yeah. And the chap who run it, he was crafty. He used to have the crown anchor board on an oilskin. And if anyone come, he'd put the oilskin on. That's how it was marked out.
Did you ever have a go on it?
No. I reckon I watched a few of them play. Most of them used to light your bets on the side. You know, I never played it, though. It looked a mug's game to me.
Yeah. So what? How long was it before you were classified as a man? It can't have been that long, can it? Was it when you were
18, you got a card then with the underage on. That means you couldn't draw your own till you were 20. See? So I got a card with the UA on, underage. And you got a few shilling more then. But going back to Scapa on the Renown, I passed for A3 on her,
What's AA3, sorry?
Well, what it was...
Was this in the early days?
As an AB, yeah, as a young AB. What it was...
We've still got you as an ordinary at the moment.
Oh, sorry.
Take you through. So, you got there, you joined her in October 1939.
Yeah.
I make you as 18 already then, you
yeah.
see. So, you couldn't have been a boy.
No, I was an ordinary seaman. That's why they put me on a pom-pom, was an ordinary seaman.
But when were you on the boys' deck on the Ronaldo?
Only on for a couple of weeks, yeah.
Now, what about the men's mess deck? What was that like?
That was the same. It was... You see, you had the boys' mess deck there. Say it was in... Just say, for instance, Dave, that's a big, long deck. You know, say it went right back to the garden there. Well, the boys' mess deck would be there, say, going along that way. Over there would be the Master Charm's office. And back here would be the Able Seaman's messes. Well, I was putting one of them, 34 mess. And exactly 26 of us in that mess. 26. And then there's other messes, you know. And across on the other side of the ship, abreast us with the torpedo men in the mess deck, you know. And the stokers was down below, forward and down below, you know. And you had forward mess deck and all on the Renown and further on.
Now, how did you get on with the men on the mess deck, you know, when you joined as an ordinary seaman?
All right. At that time, if a bloke had a badge, he couldn't answer him back. You know, if he told you to do something, you'd have to more or less do it. But everybody seemed to be friendly on the Renown. There was only one bloke. He was a bit off sauce. He was an ex-boy, but named Montgomery, of all people. And he was head and shoulders above those lads. He was more matured. Even as a boy, he looked more like an AB, you know, he's more mature. And on the quiet, he was a bit of a bully.
In what way?
He'd like to come and demand something, and, you know. And a lot of them were scared of him, you know. But he was the only one, really. All the rest...
Did anyone deal with him, or was he...
Pardon?
Did anyone deal with him?
Oh, we had a boxing team there. They'd put him in place. And if you know, if you went up to Barney Hughes, he was a Liverpudlian. He used to box for the team. He turned professional when he come out. If you'd tell him, Barney, he'd sort him out for you.
So that was the scene. What about the leading team? What were they like, the petty officers?
The petty officers, everybody says this on their arm, were very good. They'd always teach you. Like one of them come to the Duff before I did, one of the POs.
What was so good about them?
They'd go out of the way to tell you, I'll give you an instance. One leading seaman, the first one I went to, first mess I got into, I was underage and he used to give me a sip of his rum every day, although I was underage.
Is it 21 for rum or...?
20, yeah.
20, something.
Yeah, and... He used to give me a sip every day, that leading seaman. And when he left, we got another leading seaman called Uki Walker. He was two badges. And he was in charge of the bosun's party. And he said to me, "You want to come down and learn a bit more splicing," he said, "for when you go through for the hook, leading seaman, you know." And he actually took so many of us down to the bosun's locker. And showed us how to do proper splicing and everything, you know. That's what I say, they were very good, the POs, in instructing you.
What about the officers of the Renown?
My division officer couldn't wish for a better man. Lieutenant Foley, RN, marvellous person.
Foley?
Yeah. He'd take it to his cabin and explain everything. And he said to us... Used to get paid once a month. He said, "Look, he had a post office bank book, but it had naval saves. Instead of post office, it had naval savings on it. So it was the same thing." And what he used to do, he advised us to do it. He used to get paid once a month, and he advised us to join it and to go to the pay office the night before you got paid and tell them how much to put in your book. and they'd put it in out your monthly pay. So that'd go in. And when you went on leave, you could go to the post office in where you live and show them your pay book with your photograph in. And you could draw it out. No. So it was a good way of saving, really. Naval savings, they call it. I had one all the time. I was in the Navy. Yeah, through this officer. Yeah.
Now, what happened then? What's the first thing you remember happening on the Renown? You joined her in October 39. What's...
Well, the first one was when she met the Shianos and Gnosis.
Now, when was that?
That was early 40s in the...
Early 1940.
Off the Holland... Norway, coast of Norway. And it was in a snowstorm on a Sunday morning.
Now, what do you remember of the whole thing? You know, well, one thing I should have asked before we start. I mean, did you go out on other cruises before that?
Well, we went up to Iceland a few times.
Did you have any problem with seasickness?
No, none on the Renown at all. I can honestly say I've never been seasick in my life.
So that just never affected you. What about other new lads?
Oh, yeah, I've seen loads of them. I've seen young boys on the Renown. For days they couldn't eat food or nothing. But somehow with me, I don't know what it was.
Now, tell us about the trip where you met the Shardos, was it?
Yeah, on a Sunday morning.
Just tell us the whole story as you remember it.
All as I know is they opened fire and we opened fire. And we hit the Shardos and stopped her. But the Gnosis now lay a smoke screen. But the Shardos hit her and knocked our mast away. So we couldn't communicate and they didn't know nothing about us. Well...
Oh, you were saying the weather was very bad. Describe what it was like.
It was a snowstorm, yeah. Rough, very rough. And
where were you during this? Well, could you see what was happening?
Not from the pom-pom, it was too far.
Which pom-pom were you on?
Port one. But
so you couldn't... the ship couldn't communicate?
No. But one shell hit us and went right through the ship's side, back aft, and out, never exploded. Well, my friend, he's a Liverpool lad, he lives in Wallasey. He was a stoker on it, and the next morning, he had to go, one of the engineers, and clear his quarters, and he had all his pound notes drying on the line. That where the water had come, and Nick Carter had to clean them. But later on, at one of the reunions of Renown in Devonport, there was a lieutenant, R&R, from Birkenhead here. Now, he was on the docks at Birkenhead, and this German coaster came in, a brand new coaster. And he said to this German officer, said to him, "Have you ever been deep sea?" He said, "Yes. I was on deep sea 20 years. He said, "I was actually on the Renown." "Oh," he said, "I was a midshipman on the Shardos." He said, "And when you hit us, you killed 350 officers and men." Now, at the time of the war was on, the Germans never said how many men they lost on the Shardos. They just said she was it. But this is what this officer told him.
So that was the first big action.
Yeah.
You had this story about the washing, the washrooms. Was that around about that time?
No, after.
That's later, okay.
Yeah.
What's the next thing you remember then?
We came back and naturally we got leave. 10 days leave, and then we went back to sea, and we were doing...
Tell me about leave. What would you do on leave? You know, a typical naval leave.
You go home, take your parents, see your parents, well, my mother and family. Take a couple of bars of chocolate home that you could get. Now, at that time, we'd been to Gibraltar. So I'd managed to buy some like lace in Gibraltar. And I took things like that home. I also took a, which I got permission off the commander to bring on the ship, and off the leading hand to bring in a mess, a canary from my brother. He had to get permission. I paid £2 for it in Gib, and I fetched it home from my brother.
Now, when had you been to Gib? You haven't mentioned that.
Well, that was when we were in Force H with the Ark Royal. And the,
when was that?
And
was that before the Shardos?
No.
Yeah, okay, tell us about that then.
There was us, Cruiser Sheffield and the Ark Royal, that was Force H. And Admiral Somerville flew his flag in her, and we were in Gib. And then you take the convoys through to Malta, you see, from Gib. You see what I mean? And
so you were part of the escort?
Yeah, yeah. This is how we could be qualified for the Malta Medal, you see.
So what do you remember of those convoys?
Well, those photographs I showed you.
Tell us what it was like for you, though. What do you remember of it? You still on pom pom duty?
Oh, I was still on pom poms. Yeah. By this time, I'd been put on a course for AA3, and I went in a TS for a while down below. It's below decks. It's what you call a TS, transmission station. Call it TS for short, and it had all kinds of dials to pick up the speed of the aircraft, the direction it was going in, and what speed it was doing, and you had like a big arrow on the table, the centre of the table, and that used to mark and pinpoint where as the plane was coming.
So this wasn't for the main orbit. This is for the.
This, the one I was in was for the aircraft, but we also had one for the main armament, for the 15-inch. Yeah, but the one I was in was for the 4.5 guns. We had five of them either side, three forward, two back aft. Now, the ones back aft were manned by Marines. The rest were by seamen.
So what exactly were you doing in the 4.5 transmission station?
I was on one of the dials calculating the speed of the aircraft. And we had a petty officer, AA1. He was in charge of the table. He was the captain of the table. And he actually kept in line with the aircraft with his marker on the table. And then he'd say, when he got everything on target, he'd say, fire. And he'd actually press a lever, and that would go up to the director up top. And they would fire the 4.5 gun turrets. And it was quite an interesting job.
So you'd spend a lot of time down there?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't see much of the attacks?
No. And the reason I was glad I'd done that, because later on, when I had to leave the Renown to go for a higher gunnery rate, AA2, I had to know all about the TS table. And in the class I was in, there was five petty officers, seven leading seamen, and three ABs. And I was the only one out of the whole class who'd been on the table. So it was a big advantage to me. Than the POs even.
Now, what do you remember about operations in the Mediterranean?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you were beneath decks a lot, but what else do you remember about it? Were you nervous?
Yes, definitely nervous, especially when you were below decks, because you always knew if a torpedo had hit the ship or a mine, you'd be being down below decks, you'd get it.
Did it weigh on your nerves at all?
Sometimes it would, you'd be very jittery, you know. Sometimes, yes, you would. You'd have your jittery spells.